Hey everyone, today's guest is the immensely talented actor and producer Josh Hutcherson. You know him from the Hunger Games series, Journey 2, The Mysterious Island, The Kids Are All Right, and a lot more. Josh was amazing. I really enjoyed our talk, and I hope you do too. I continue to wish for everyone's good health and happiness during these unpredictable times, and I hope these podcasts are a welcome distraction from everything that's going on. Please reach out to us here at Unqualified. Send your questions, your answers, and your stories to our website, unqualified.com. And now here he is, Josh Hutcherson.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Unqualified with your host, Anna Faris.
We've met before. Have we met before in person?
No, you know, there was one time it was at a concert at the Greek.
Oh,
I don't know.
Was it Hall and Oates? No.
Yes, yes.
That's because that's the only time I've been to the Greek.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you were like, I remember you and like maybe a couple of friends or
yeah,
your husband, boyfriend, man person in your life
yeah.
may have been there. I remember seeing you guys, and you guys were like having the best time. We were having the best time. That's as close as I think I've come to,
oh, that's
to
so
physically
funny.
Meeting you.
Yeah.
Hang on one second.
Oh, yeah,
my
yeah.
Dogs are going crazy. Hey, hey. Sorry about that.
How many dogs do you have?
I have two. Oh. They sound like a lot more. It's two big pit bulls. So they got a lot of noise.
Yeah. I love animals, but I have trouble because we travel. I don't know. There's guilt. My mom raised me on guilt.
Yeah.
She's like an agnostic, but she still raised me with a ton of guilt.
That's interesting.
So it felt like it wasn't rooted in something except for like some kind of human decency bond that maybe we all hopefully share to some degree. Were you raised with religion?
You know, I remember being born and raised in Kentucky. It's obviously a very religious place in many parts. My mom was raised Pentecostal, so she would literally go to church with her grandma who would speak in tongues and they would have snakes.
Amazing.
So that did not get passed down to me. I remember when I was a kid, we used to go to church some on Sundays, and then there was a time we went and it was like in a poorer kind of part of the state, and like they were passing around a bowl collecting money from the people, and they were saying like, you know, I heard God tell me that we need a new organ for this church, the church organ, so please. And these are people that, like, you know, couldn't put food on the table barely, and sometimes, and they were, because it was the voice of God that had said this, they would, you know, put their money over. And after that, my mom was like, we're not going back. So,
wow.
that was sort of the end of
wow.
that. I think she was doing it as like a formality and more of a social kind of standard than
right.
it was about like instilling the spirit of God in us, so to
right.
speak. But yeah, so I was happy that she saw that for what that was in that specific moment.
It's so smart to raise a child with critical thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so how are you doing though with quarantining? How are you feeling?
I mean, it's day to day. You know, some days you wake up and you sort of think about everything that's happening and how crazy it all is. And you can kind of go down a rabbit hole. But honestly, for the most part, thank God my girlfriend's here with me. So I have someone.
Oh, good.
But we're, you know, we're staying sane. We're staying healthy. We're painting a lot, which I never do. And trying to be creative as possible. But it's weird because I don't feel it a lot. Like, I want to write. And I have all these ideas that I've been like working on over the years. And I'm like, oh, I'm quarantined. Great time to like do all this.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, I'm not. It's very frustrating, that element for sure.
Oh, Josh, it's the oddest thing. This is the fourth podcast we've done like this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been great. But I'm oddly exhausted all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I can't tell if it's like exhaustion out of some undercurrent of anxiety that I'm not really registering. And then there's also the guilt of feeling very fortunate because we're so, you know.
Extremely.
I know that I'm inadvertently guilty of complaining about shit that I should never complain about. And so I kind of want to think about those elements and how social media sort of relates. I think in the last decade, it's felt like actors, and you've been acting since you were a kid, so you have an insight maybe to this, that there used to be, the, you know, sort of the degree of separation, the mystique of like celebrity, you know, because you would see celebrities mm-hmm. on talk shows or in movies or whatever, or magazines, but that was limited to those elements that are highly controlled. And with social media, there's the perception of easy access, I think, too, and additional scrutiny. I know there's definitely been some Instagram stuff or Twitter stuff that I've done, and I know my management is like, you need to do that right now.
Yeah. You know, I think that the access and the what's the right word for it? It's something about the fact that people expect that now from a lot of, you know, people in the public eye. They expect this kind of access. And then also people who can give that access, they use it in a way to like posture, in a way to like give this idea of, you know, it feels very inauthentic to me. And that's something I've always struggled with social media and the pressure that puts on everyone, on, you know, a teenage girl in the middle of Ohio who's looking at these Instagram posts of this girl who's like the most beautiful and posting all of this kinds of things. And it's like, but that's also not real. It's a representation. It's a performance. It's very like performative. And for me, it messes with my head and like the morality of what it means for us and the what it could mean for us socially and the implications are massive. And there are like unforeseen consequences of having that much access. But I do think that now more than ever, it is like if you are a person in the public eye, you are expected to, and you do many times, put so much of yourself out into the world. And I think that that's a dangerous thing for a lot of reasons. It's a very weird, weird thing.
Completely. What are some of your pet peeves with actors like on set?
For me, it's when I go to set, I don't take my phone at all. And like, I definitely don't have it in a scene. And I leave it in the like the holding or trailer or whatever. Cause I just, it's like another thing and I don't want to deal with that world. And I get like, it's a big pet peeve of mine. If I'm like in a scene with somebody and they cut, and then they pull out their phone and they're like doing emails or something. I'm just like, and it's fine. Like if you're still doing your job well and you're focused and everything, but it just gets under my skin.
Yeah.
And it's just annoying to me. Like, yeah. I don't know.
I'm with you on that because I like to, well, it's also, it's not even that I like to, I think I have to sort of, especially with single camera stuff, it's a little different doing mom with multicam, but with single camera stuff, I do think it's staying sort of focused, especially if I have to do something emotional.
It is not easy.
What has been like your favorite character that you've played?
Man, I think, and this is something that no one's really seen, but I did this short film that Benicio del Toro directed 9 years ago now as a short film. And I played this like young American guy who goes down to Cuba for like a film festival. And it's like this night on the town and sort of what he encounters. And there was just something about that character that felt very obviously connected to me personally, but also he was just easy. It was an easy character to play. And I really enjoyed that a lot.
Was that like Stranger in a Strange Land kind of idea? Like,
yeah, yeah, totally. 100%. Yeah, it was. Yeah, he was, you know, and two, he was like supposed to be an actor. He was in Cuba. We actually shot it in Cuba, in Havana.
Oh, wow. That must have been amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of realism around it. And I just felt the most comfortable I'd ever felt as an actor to just like all these things we're talking about that can like distract you and get in your head. I didn't have that. I think because Benicio was a really great director and he set us up for success. But I love that character. It's probably one of my favorite things that I've ever made as an actor that like, I don't even know if it exists on YouTube. So.
Oh, we got to find it. We got to find it. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
And I would imagine too, the liveliness, like of, I would imagine, God, that must've been amazing.
Yeah.
Follow-up question on that would be, how do you think your acting has shifted? You started acting at 9, is that right?
At 9, yeah. Yeah. I was just always a very imaginative kid and very curious. And I think that my curiosity for people is sort of what drove me to want to act, was just like understanding the minds of people and the psychological elements of it. But I think as a kid, you know, you don't go those deep levels of like building out a character of like their past and what their relationship with their parents is. You don't do any of that stuff. You just kind of just show up and know your lines and then try to make it seem real. And, you know, I think like in recent times, I've just kind of really trying to take a step deeper into it all and just understand who this person really is and how to embody their anxieties, embody their fears, and kind of really build out the subtext of what they're feeling and thinking throughout a scene. And so that's kind of like been my approach now for the last few years.
I love that.
Yeah.
I really loved working with adult actors in like the Seattle community, which is where I grew up. But I felt more kinship. I'm sure I was just like the annoying kid. Mm-hmm. But I loved that feeling of kinship being around such creative, dynamic people that were fascinating to me, that didn't treat me like a kid. That was 100%. Thrilling.
Yeah, I had a very similar experience, like starting working on movies. And then like it was like 2 movies a year. And so like that was my life. And so I didn't have like a, you know, quote unquote normal childhood by any means. And I spent majority of my time on sets with adults and not and in school with my peers of my age. So I've always like been around older people and like you're saying, these creative, dynamic people that I wouldn't have had access to if I weren't an actor. And that's so much, I think, of what has built me as a person are those experiences and being exposed to that at such a young age. And also, too, why I'm really interested now in directing and these other elements is because all my life, as a kid, I was around this energy that I just fell in love with.
What are you painting? And what do you use watercolor? Do you use oil? What do you do?
I'm using acrylic and I'm not a very good painter. Like I'm not even a painter. So I'm just ripping off Rothko paintings and just doing like colors with like rectangles on them, like modern shit. My girlfriend's like a really cool painter and has been like developing her style and stuff. And she's way, way, way like hands and fists above me in that regard for sure.
I love it that you guys do, and I love your guitars. Do you play guitar?
A little bit, yeah. Yeah, I've been like my girlfriend's like classically trained Spanish guitar.
Damn, your girlfriend's fucking rad.
She's like a badass in every way.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we've been like, her mom has like directed some short films and things in Spain. And her and I actually did the score for two of the short films. And like
oh,
the piano
amazing.
And stuff like that. And so we mess around with music. She's much more musician than I am.
Do you mind my asking how you guys met?
We did a movie together.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we've been together for 7 years.
Huh.
I love talking about her. She's the light of my life. So
oh my God.
She's
that's
amazing. Yeah. So I did the short film with Benicio del Toro. And then there was a feature movie where he was going to play Pablo Escobar. And so I did a movie called Paradise Lost with Benicio, and she played my girlfriend, fiance in that movie. And that was 8 years ago now. So
how long like into the shoot were you guys like, were the, like the sparks flying?
I mean, I knew it the moment that I met her.
Oh, was it like a rehearsal, like a table read? What was it?
It was actually like a chemistry read.
Oh, nice.
Before she was even cast.
So did you do chemistry reads with a bunch of other actresses as well?
Only her.
Oh, okay.
It was only her. Yeah, yeah. It was her first time acting in English. She's from Madrid. And so it was her first time acting in English. And she flew to LA alone at like, she was like, I think 19 at that time. And then she came up to my house with me and the director and we read some scenes together. And I mean, I knew right away, she's just an angel and it's like the purest soul I'd ever encountered. So I was like, I hope I can be good enough to be worthy.
Oh, I was in Madrid doing press for House Bunny.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating because most of the journalists were women and most of them, the majority of them, were very interested in sort of the strong female perspective. And I think, you know, it was the House Bunny, which is like, you know... It's like American cotton candy or something. So anyway, my stereotype of a Spanish woman is a strong point of view. I loved that a lot of these journalists were getting kind of intellectual with like, you know, the, sort of the female position in society. As I'm promoting the House Bunny. Yeah, yeah. She's a Playboy bunny. She's got a heart of gold, all right?
Yeah. I love the Spanish culture so much. I actually spend my time between here and Madrid. We have an apartment there together. So whenever I'm not working or quarantined, I'm in Madrid. And, you know, I think that for me, culturally, the thing that I love so much is the conversations that you have with people just feel very real. It feels very genuine. And that like point of view, that perspective, it's, you know, I find a lot of times and, you know, I love America and I love being an American, but I find that there's a lot of, you know, posturing or there's like a certain superficiality that really exists within a lot of conversations that I have with people here. And in Spain, it exists, but it's just so much less. And I feel like there's just something that's real, like of the earth, human to human, connecting, passion, honesty, communication. And these are things that I admire and I experience a lot when I'm there.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Right.
Yeah.
So you lived in the Oakwood Apartments?
Oh my goodness. I did.
Hey, dear listeners. So the Oakwood Apartments, it's a complex. I've stayed there for a weekend. But Josh, why don't you describe what the Oakwood Apartments are?
So the Oakwood Apartments are this magical grouping of like over 1,000 apartments spread out on the side of the backside of the Hollywood sign hill, basically. That's where this is.
So, yeah. So it's like, it's, you know, bordering on the valley, like Studio City.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. It overlooks like Warner Brothers Studios in Studio City. And basically it is like the mecca of child actors. If they came to LA, they stayed at Oakwood at some point. I did 6 years there. I was 6 years in that place.
Shit.
Yeah. And it was some of the best years of my life, to be honest. It's a crazy place. I loved it because I didn't go to school as a kid and I didn't have friends. And so like for me, I was around all these other kids from all over the country who were similar to me, who wanted to do this and like were like kind of these like charismatic, rambunctious kids. So I had a great time and I met many friends from there. And you know, it's it was a magical place. But it's also, there's a dark side of the Oakwood. Which is you see kids who are there because their parents are forcing them to be, because their parents wanted to be actors and didn't make it. And I had an encounter one time where I had like started to get callbacks, which was like, that's a big deal. And I was like probably 10 or 11. And these three moms came up to me and my mom wasn't there. And they were like, honey, we are so proud of you. We are doing such great work. Our son actually has the same audition you guys are going out for. We were wondering if you could show us how you were going to do it so we can maybe help our kid.
No.
I was like, this feels like an uh-oh situation. I've heard of these. This feels wrong. I was like, I don't know the lines.
That's what you said?
Exactly.
Good, quick thinking.
I was like, I don't know it. They're like, oh, we had the sides. They literally had the sides with them. And I was like, I can't right now.
Is this like by the pool? I need like, or is this in a hall?
They have like the two clubhouses, you know, like where they have like the gym, like the little media room.
Oh, right, right, right.
And on Sundays, they have a brunch that they do, like a free brunch where it's just like donuts and like sugary juice. And I loved it as a kid. I was a little porker. I was like, I love to eat. I still do. But like, so for me, free donuts was like, hallelujah. So it was in this like clubhouse setting and I was like stuffing my face with like a jelly filled or something. And that's when I was approached.
That's crazy. So you, did you?
I didn't do it. No, I ran.
Good for you.
I ran home. I don't remember. I remember that. The story is so like vivid in my mind. I think it was like, it could have even been for like a commercial or something, like something. Whatever,
right.
That story just always has been embedded in my mind.
The sabotage, the mom sabotage. Yeah. Oh,
I know,
it's
crazy. Flying V formation, the whole thing.
Oh, okay. So, what was the first big acting job that you booked?
Big in what way?
Okay, what was a very defining role that you got in your life?
For me, it was like, because you know, I've been asked a similar question of like, when did you know that you had made it as an actor?
Oh God,
and like. For me, I was like, I mean, honestly, the moment that I walked onto the very first set of my entire life, I was like, I'm here. I'm good. This is my life now. Done. Like, this is what I'm doing. And that was a TV movie for Animal Planet called Miracle Dogs. That was about magical dogs that could lick people and heal them. And it was a fantastic little film. that was like my first
movie. You were just like covered
set.
In like baby food?
Yeah, completely.
Yeah, yeah.
But then like the first kind of like the bigger thing that really I felt like was like making me move somewhere was the Polar Express. I did like the motion capture with Tom Hanks and Robert Zemeckis and all this as a 10-year-old. I was playing like the boy. And so like that experience for me was, it was incredible. I mean, I don't even think at that time I really could grasp the luck and the everything associated with being able to work with these people. But looking back on it, like it was so formative.
It was such a highly technical movie too. I mean, I would imagine so much is about sort of the precision.
Yes and no. I mean, there were things about it that had to be very precise, but as the actual performance goes and like what you're able to do, you had freedom to move, you had freedom to do anything. And so in that way, it was actually very non-restrictive even because they didn't have a physical camera. They literally just built a set like of rebar and shit in the middle of a soundstage. And then like it was almost like directed like a play kind of how you would like move through the scene. You could like do anything. You don't have to worry about where the cameras were at all. So there's a lot of freedom in that. But for me, that was a huge, huge learning experience. Just to be around that high a level of filmmakers is like so formative and gave me such a base love of a set and of like the crew and of the team and loving seeing how this whole thing worked. This was Robert Zemeckis. Like, it's insane. Like, as a 10-year-old. So that to me was like the thing I think that made me be like, start to really get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I did Yogi Bear 3D.
Okay.
I didn't have a lot of movement, Josh.
Yeah.
I didn't have a lot of freedom. It's like, stand so here sorry. And go, Yogi. So I did.
Yeah. You did it. And
I
you
sure
loved it.
Did. Yogi. God. Okay. So I want to do some deal breakers, but can I ask you some life questions first?
Yeah.
Okay. You can say pass at any time.
Okay.
What is your favorite ice cream flavor?
I don't like ice cream.
You don't like ice cream, right? Yeah. Do you have a frozen treat that you like?
I like frozen bananas dipped in chocolate.
Oh yeah, that's good. Do you like nuts? Nuts? No nuts?
Nah. I give or take. If it has nuts on it and I want it, I'll eat it.
Okay. Well, now your diet is intriguing to me. You love Madrid, so I assume you eat jamón, right?
Actually, I don't eat meat.
We don't eat meat.
We don't eat meat. No, we're pescatarian. My girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
So we eat fish. Yeah.
So, what's your favorite like style of cuisine?
Japanese, for sure.
Yeah,
I love sushi. I love all the flavors of Japanese cuisine. I would eat sushi every meal of the day, including like 7 a.m. breakfast if I could.
I was going to ask you what the first thing you're going to do after this, after we're allowed.
It's going to be going to a sushi restaurant.
Do you have a favorite one?
My barometer for like sushi that I will eat is so low. I will eat like gas station sushi. I will eat any kind of sushi. So I'll go anywhere.
All right. What was your favorite toy as a child?
I loved Legos. Legos and Lincoln Logs. But truthfully, like as a kid in Kentucky, it was always about your bike and your friends, and you would like go in the summertime. That was like the greatest thing. You just go on endless bike rides in the neighborhoods and
oh, have fun, like freedom.
It's like I think back to that and I just see this warm, like hot Kentucky air and like this like band of like weird
kids on their bikes.
I'm totally
imagining you guys like jumping off a train trellis into like,
honestly, it wasn't quite Stand By Me, but it was, you know, it was in that world.
Did you ever want to stop acting?
I did. I had a point when I was, I think, 16. At 16, I was a very difficult kid for a while.
Why do you think?
I was rebelling against everything. I was just a very rebellious kid, and I think that partially, you know, my parents always tried to raise me and my brother with this idea of, you know, mutual respect and all this stuff. But I think that there was something about me having so many constraints on my life, being like a working child from 9 to 16, that I just wanted normalcy. I started to be sad about missing like being a normal teenager, a normal kid. And so at that point, I went back to Kentucky and I was going to quit acting. And I stopped for like one semester of high school. I went into high school for one semester after having already made movies and been like famous in my town and whatnot. And it was hell. Like, it was, the acting and living that life is so much better than what I had experienced. I was like, I'm so lucky, and I'm an asshole for thinking like kicking a gift horse in the mouth. Like,
what was hellacious about it?
If I thought that my life was structured and too much responsibility of working as an actor, going to high school was so much more structured and so much more pressure and responsibility than I felt as being an actor on set. Like, that's like how, I don't know how teenagers do it, and I applaud anyone who finished high school, even those who tried. To me, it's crazy.
Josh, you're so right. Michael, my partner, has a 16-year-old daughter. She'd be so thrilled to meet you. Do you think that Margot wants to come down?
Oh, yeah.
Because she's going through all this stuff, and it's intense to watch.
Yeah.
College, social pressure, there's so much.
Yeah.
And I love what you were saying earlier about social media. But yeah, how did fame affect your social standing? Like, did it make things easier or harder?
I don't know, because I never saw another version.
Right.
I don't know what each individual's experience was. I mean, for me, it had its positives and negatives. You know, there was some bullying from kids who were, you know, bullies. And then, you know, there was some like ass kissing from those people who like, you know, saw the fame as something that they should kiss up to in a way. But it was just, it was weird. It was, I needed to do it. And I'm really, really grateful that I did. And I'm really thankful that my parents supported that, like, need of discovery at that age. But I'm very happy that I went back to acting. And that was a very short-lived.
So did you miss, like, I don't know, did you romanticize, like, prom or like, camp or, like,
I've got a great story about prom, actually.
Yeah.
So when I was 16, it was right around that same time. And I was being homeschooled in Kentucky, and I really wanted to go to a prom. I had a girlfriend at the time, and she was also homeschooled. And we were 16 years old, which is just weird. And so there was a group that was doing a homeschool prom. And so we literally went and we did a homeschool prom event. One of the kids rented a limo. And so all the kids got in and we drove, and it was literally in the basement of a church. It was crazy.
I love that. Josh, this is Margot.
Hi.
How's it going?
16. We were just talking about, Josh was telling me that, Josh, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but he was saying that what year were you when you went to high school?
It would have been
sophomore year.
16. What year is that?
Sophomore? Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
So
yeah.
Josh went to school for one semester and he was like, what did you say?
It was so hard. It was because I had been living this life in acting for so many years that I was like, I'm quitting acting. I just want to be a normal teenager. I want to have a normal life. I want to go to high school. And I went, and I applaud anyone who does high school and has made it through that gauntlet, because it was so challenging. The social dynamics were so complicated. And that was a little bit before now, when social media and the interaction is very different, that I just applaud anyone who has even attempted high school, because it was just really, really challenging for me.
Yeah. And she's an amazing student. And yeah,
that's amazing.
But fuck, it was hard.
But too, at 16, I was really angry. I was an angry kid at that time. And I ended up going through a lot of therapy to reprogram some ways of thinking. But I was just very angry.
Do you know why? Do you know what the root of that was? I mean, I think most 16-year-olds are. I mean, I was.
Yeah. Yeah. I got arrested. That's the level. I was sneaking out of my house. I've got scars on my fists from punching through walls and mirrors. And I was just full of rage. And I think it was because, honestly, and of course I'm going to blame my parents to some extent, because to some extent it is their fault. But it was, I didn't feel that I had a space to express myself as angered or sad with them. Because my mom is extremely, extremely optimistic and very bubbly and positive, and which is one of her greatest virtues that's taught me so much, and to see the beauty in things always. But when you're an angry teenager and you just want someone to say I understand you, I understand what you're feeling and your sadness and your anger. And I didn't feel that I had that. And maybe I didn't. It was in my own head and I just whatever. But I expressed it through anger and aggression and all these things. And then I went through therapy that really just gave me tools to learn how to think about things differently, to how to deal with those feelings. And it changed me forever. Those things are still things I use today.
I think that's so wise what you said. And it's interesting for me. I was really angry because I felt I wasn't very popular. I was really quiet and I was just waiting for my world to expand. Mm. But what's interesting about you, you already had this large world that you had experienced. Mm-hmm. And then, so then to contain it back into the microcosm of high school, I would imagine that would be frustrating.
It was a disaster, but it's something I had to do. I think that it brought out a lot of my anger problems. It brought out a lot of my anxiety and my fears and all these things, brought them to the very forefront of my existence. And so I had to deal with them. And so because of that, I'm eternally grateful to my therapist who was able to do that. My parents for staying by my side through all of that, even though I was a complete asshole.
You have a little brother?
Yeah.
Do you guys get along really well?
We get along great. He's great.
During that time, because I asked this because I have an older brother, and whenever he was kind of the rebellious, angry one, I would sort of subconsciously become the good kid. But then he went off to college and he was doing great in college. And that's when I was like, fuck this noise. I hate this town. I hate this shit. So it was always a little bit of a balance. I just wonder about those dynamics.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. I mean, my brother's name's Connor. He's extremely intelligent. He went to Georgia Tech, has a degree in engineering, micro math and German. He's a brilliant minded young guy. He's 23 now, I think. 23. Yeah. And, at that time I was such a terror and sucking, I think, so much energy from our family that I think that he kind of, in a way, sort of receded into himself in ways. And I don't think it was so much he became the de facto good kid. It was just more we have to deal with your brother's shit right now. So you're fine. Like, it, so I, right. I feel bad too in that way. I feel like guilt for that time of not having, being so selfish, you know, and as a 16-year-old going through that in that moment, that is your world and you are selfish. It's like part of your growth as a person. But, you know, I have, you know, some lingering pain and guilt from that time in my life, for sure.
I think that's really generous of you to do self-reflection. I think especially in our industry, it can be difficult to do that. I mean, I guess it's difficult. It takes courage from anybody, for sure.
Yeah.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Okay, so I was watching some YouTube things and you were on Jimmy Fallon and speaking the gibberish language that Margot knows.
Oh, to go.
That used to make us crazy. You haven't done it in so long. Okay, wait, Margot, will you come? Could you still remember it, Josh?
Yeah.
I don't even understand the prince. It seems like it's basic, but it is also
idiots. Idigas, Bedigarigi, Bedigay, Sidigig, Budiga, Idigate, Tidigate, Sidigate, Midigan, Idigate, Tudugu, Idigate, Yudigur, Madagath, Tudugu, Tudugu, Udigan, Dudigur, Sidigan, Hadigal, Tudugu, Dudugu, Idigate, Widigat, Yudigur, Bredigain.
Idiga.
But I got Idigif, Yudigu, Fotogo, Gidigas, Udigan, Udiga, Yudigu, Kedigan, Torgo, Dudigal, Lidigi, Udigan, Dudigur, Stadigan, Udigas, Ladigag, Didigas.
Okay, I think you just said.
Yeah.
Then you'll ask me.
Yeah.
Wait, Margo, you do some. I don't know. I don't know how to do it.
It gets pretty good.
What's the origin of this? What's it called?
Gibberish.
Yeah,
just called gibberish. What's the origin of it? Who came up with this?
I believe it was born in North Carolina on a farm. There was a farm.
But it's been
the origin.
Did you speak gibberish when you were in high school?
No, it was something I did at Oakwood. That was an Oakwood apartment.
That's an Oakwood lesson. Yeah. All right, I love it.
Yeah, and there's variations too.
Like what?
Derber zebe naba derber welben debe ibis labek debis eben ibis labek ebe ebekobo ibis subu bubu 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 bubu. If it's super weird, it sounds like you're like underwater, like bubbly or something. It's the same principle though.
But wait, Josh, wait, tell us more about the prom at home.
Oh yeah, it was a homeschool prom, and this group was throwing it for all the kids in the region who were homeschooled and wanted to have a prom experience. And it was being thrown in like the basement of a church, and it was all homeschool kids that didn't know each other coming together for a prom. I mean, like, look, there's a lot of reasons that kids are homeschooled and it works really well for some people. One thing that is missing a lot of times is social interaction. And if you take the combination of homeschooled children in Kentucky who have social skill problems and then bring them all together for a prom, it is a magical world. It was crazy. Again, that was a time where I was so crazy that like, I don't even know what I was thinking or feeling, but I remember the images very vividly. And it was, you know, there was drama. My girlfriend at the time, her and I got into an argument and like were these like jealous, angry little teenage love things. And it was just like full of all the disaster that one would expect from a prom, let alone a homeschool prom. All my life, like, I was very basic in the mind of like, I want to find true romance, love, like deep, passionate, eternal love. Like I bought into all this. Like I bought into it. So from like age 10, I was falling in love left and right. Like I was just like, I love this. I was just like that kid that just fell in love with everybody all the time. And so, yeah, but at 16, you're discovering so much about yourself, about your own physicality, your sexuality, your hormones, your connection with people. It's just such a big collision of all these things together.
It's like you're a semi truck. Like,
yeah, it was fun. It was disastrous. And I grew a lot from that time in my life.
My first boyfriend, I didn't have until I was a senior in high school. And I look back feeling like, oh, I was in love, but because I don't want to disqualify it, like, oh, I was too immature to be in love or whatever. But it was a different kind of love that I feel now. And it was so much less about him.
Yeah,
you know, it was like me and the idea.
Yeah.
And I was a very awkward kid. I still am pretty awkward. And he was like a good looking dude. And I couldn't believe that he liked me. So I would do anything for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, my mom raised me to be a really proud person. Anyway, when he broke up with me, I was just gutted. I was like, you know, I was in a funk for 4 months maybe.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't even really like him. It was all about me. It's funny.
Completely.
I think my own personal rejection and acceptance, and then the rejection. It was just all like,
yeah, I think that goes back to like a very natural thing for at that age, at least in my life. I was very selfish. I was very self-centered, and you can't see outside of your own shit at that point in time. And like, I won't disqualify, like, because my first love was definitely like a real love, and I loved that person, and we loved being together and all these things. But you're right. There was a lot of the idea of it, but there's also like, we had this addiction to like toxicity to and each other. And like this, it was very passionate and very real. And it developed me in a lot of ways that were great. And I learned a lot of things, but yeah, it's different with every person like that you fall in love with. I think that love grows and changes. I've been with my girlfriend now for 7 years, and just recognizing when you like love someone and that you want to be a part of their world of helping to help them pass their own fears and anxieties and help them get through their own shit so they can become the best versions of themselves. That's like when I have like felt like, oh, this is love. Like I care. That's so important, you know?
Well, and then when I moved, like in my 20s, when I first moved here to LA, I think I was 22, and I immediately fell into a relationship. Like we moved in together 4 months, and then we got married, and then we got divorced. But I spent the decade of my 20s with my ex-husband, and there were a lot of great things. We are divorced, however, but but I think that I was at that time too, I was looking for an anchor here in LA because, you know, I was like auditioning, like you remember, like 3 times a day or whatever, like racing all over town with a Thomas guide and just like,
yeah, completely.
Yeah. And so to have something that was familiar, that was some, you know, somebody that I could come home to, was something that I think I really craved. So once again, it was like, it wasn't about him necessarily. It was about me. And I think it's just interesting how during that time too, it was like, the recognizing the shifts in love and how like we've I don't know if it's as we get older, our emotions are not dampened, but I feel less erratic maybe.
Well, I think it has to do a lot with like getting to know yourself too. You know, I think that it's really easy to fall into a relationship, to not look at your own problems, not look at your own shit, to like have something else to focus on. And so I think like, it takes years, and for some people more than others, and some people can figure it out quickly. But I think it has a lot to do with figuring out what is important to you and learning that you can't control a feeling, but you can control how you're looking at something, your perspective on things. And that is where then that can influence the change of your emotions. Instead of like something somebody saying or doing something and it makes you angry or sad immediately, think about it from a different perspective, and that can then change how that influences your emotion. So yeah. It's like you can't deny an emotion. That's a feeling, but they come from thoughts. And so you can work on that element of it and become more logical. And maybe that's what happens too, is you get more logical. You start to realize like, is that really something I need to be angry about? Is that something that really bothers me that much?
Am I going to make an active choice in this? Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly. And so I think that that's part of just experience and life and growing and living.
Josh, I want to get back to life questions, but first, will you ask Margot if she has a boyfriend? Because I'm too scared.
You have a boyfriend, Margot?
I do not have a boyfriend.
No, okay. All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, but she's been quite, she just got her, she got, you got your driver's license like 4 days before. I know.
I remember when I got my driver's license, it was like the thing I've been looking forward to up until I turned 15 and a half in Kentucky at that time. And it was like, freedom. It was like freedom, and now you're quarantined. Wow.
I like drive that's around the block. It's really fun.
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's good. You can get some practice with less cars around, I guess, but it's, yeah, it's, that's unfortunate.
Okay. Well, this question may or may not be applicable to you. What was your first boss like?
Well, I've never had a job.
You're like Robert Zemeckis.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When I was, so again, 16 is a very like important time in my life where like I went through a lot. And I was very, all the aggressivity and craziness. And so my my parents had decided like some structured real work would be good for me. So my dad had a friend who was a construction foreman. And so I went and would like hay fields, like in the middle of the summer, like Kentucky heat. And he was a great boss. He was great. And was somebody to talk to. And I mean, he was doing it as a favor, but you know, it was good.
I love that. You must have been a great worker for you to describe him as a great boss.
Maybe.
Okay. So what is your greatest fear?
Greatest fear.
I know. There's just so many.
I think my greatest fear is not experiencing all that I can in life, of like arriving at that final moment of death, whether it's sudden and soon or years away. I tried to live without regret, and I really try to, you know, do things and live life, you know, to the fullest. But I also have social anxiety, and that stops me a lot of times from going and doing a lot of things and entering into other things I'm not comfortable with. So I think that's probably a pretty big fear.
Do you like talk shows?
You know what's crazy is I black out. I don't know what I say or do in a talk show. I literally will like go out there. I'm so nervous that it'll just all happen. And then I'll walk off afterwards and be like, what did I say? Did I do something wrong? Like, I'm like, I don't know. I genuinely cannot tell you one thing that I said. I do enjoy it because I like being funny and I like talking and I like humans and interacting. But I think that I compartmentalize it every single time. So that says something.
Oh, I'm always like, this story's not going to be funny at all.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even a story.
And it's like they're going to set you up with a prompt to get you into your story. But it's like, you know, it's coming. But then it's like, how? Yeah, it's so weird.
I know. And it's like, maybe the producer liked it when I told, but why? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is your favorite sick rainy day movie?
Oh, boy. It might be Benjamin Button.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
It's a great movie. It's David Fincher, Brad Pitt. It's fantastic. It's such a life story. You know, you're experiencing this life and love and loss. It's like a Forrest Gump kind of feel in ways, but it's David Fincher. So it's got like that style to it in a way that I love it.
I want to get back to your answer that reminds me, because you're talking about sort of a life journey, but when you're talking about living life to its fullest or your greatest fear is dying or missing opportunity, do you have specific bucket list things?
No, it's just like, so when I was a kid, like young kid, like 7, 8 years old, I would lay in bed at night and cry myself to sleep thinking about death and thinking about like that moment and finality of it, and everything that you've ever known and loved and cared about and lived would just be gone forever. And it's be a blackness void. And I would just like cry myself to sleep. So it's more about like getting to that moment and being like, I missed out on things, not even knowing what those things are. I don't have like, I want to live for a month on the coast of Italy, or I want to, you know, do, there's nothing like that. It's just wanting to live to the fullest and hopefully not have regrets when that happens.
Do you have a character that you would love to play?
I would love to play Jeff Buckley. Because I've been obsessed with him forever.
Has there been anything? You would be amazing at that. Has there been anything?
There has been. There was a movie, I think, that Penn Badgley did, maybe, like quite a few years ago. I also cannot sing at all. So it's a huge hurdle. Because he has like one of the greatest voices. But just like, if I could sing, my dream character would be Jeff Buckley.
I know you can do this, Josh. I love that idea.
It is shocking how bad. I can do accents. I can imitate. I can do voices. I can all these crazy things. I cannot get my voice to sing in tune.
I can't either. Okay, what is your favorite, do you have a favorite book or author? Or like a book that you've read multiple times?
Not really. I'm ashamedly very underread.
I like that admittance. I haven't read for a long time.
I was never like pushed as a child to read books. It was not like a thing that anyone in my family did at all, ever. And so I never like got that bug of like getting a good book and like diving in. I've been getting into it some more. I really like Nabokov. I read Lolita, and now I'm reading The Real Life of Sebastian Knight. But like, I've read, honestly, it's an embarrassingly low number. I've probably read 7, 8 books in my life. That's one of my biggest embarrassments and things I feel horrible about. And I got to change it. I just have to do it.
Okay, wait. So what is a trait you most dislike in others?
A trait I dislike? My God. I don't have one. I'm really trying to think. I don't, like, what's yours? Like, what would be a thing you would say for this? To help my mind kickstart.
I don't like pettiness. But I'm not, because I don't get too irritated with people in general.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, lack of consideration, lack of empathy, probably.
That when you started, that's exactly where my mind started to go to.
Yeah.
Is lack of empathy. Or just an unawareness.
Yeah.
I think is like something that's really frustrating to me. Like, do you not like, you just can't think about anything except for this? Like, you
right.
can't think beyond that? That's very frustrating.
And I think that for people in our industry too, where there's that weird thing where because of what we do, we sometimes get treated with more privilege. And I think it can be poisoning and it can be overwhelming sometimes too. Like suddenly you are treated as though you're of more value.
Yeah.
And that really can fuck with one's head. And it also makes you feel guilty and not very deserving, I guess, of
100%.
Kids would tell me that they wanted to be famous. And I'm sure that you mm-hmm. got that too. Like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be famous. I'm 43. I love it that I had to think about that. But that wasn't sort of part of like the dialogue growing up. And I think that like social media has made fame in and of itself become a profession. And it's amazing that I wouldn't have any idea how to make a TikTok. Margo's,
yeah.
She promised me that she'll explain to me what TikTok is.
I don't either. I do find it funny. Like there's like a lot of actors and people who are quarantined right now and their kids are like, do a TikTok with me. And they're like, okay, like trying to do this like thing. It's honestly, I don't know what it is. I don't understand it. I'm with you on this one, but I respect it. No, I completely agree. I think there has been this like being famous, you know, you can monetize it being famous now with you know, Instagram and getting paid and all these things. And it is such like a foreign thing to me. I used to have like, when people would ask me questions about, you know, how does it feel to be famous now and all these things to me. And I would say, you know, it has its ups and downs and da 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 da. Or like, I would start to complain in some way, which is so ungracious and unfair. And I've grown far away from that. But, you know, they would say like, yeah, but, you know, when you started acting, you obviously being famous is like part of it. It's like part of what happens.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, I started at 9 years old because I found out that you can make movies. I did it for that. I did not do this in any way to get notoriety, to get fame, to get attention. I actually don't like attention. I got a job that is like, I happen to have a thing that I can do well and I love doing it. But what comes with that is like this level of attention and like putting you, like you're saying, in this like other level of like value or importance. And I can't stand that. It's something that used to, like, especially during Hunger Games stuff, when all that was at its height, it would eat me alive and I would become so reclusive and so like just tormented in ways.
Oh gosh.
It was crazy. It's crazy. And yeah, I would get very angry when people said like, you chose this. I'm like, I didn't choose this. I just wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of perks and there's a lot of things that I'm beyond grateful for and super lucky and I'm very aware, but it is crazy.
Yeah. There's that feeling of like, I don't know, the pressure to be something other than human, I guess. I don't know if I'm articulating this well, but I think it does make one want to stay at home.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's a weird, weird thing. And, you know, anonymity is something that is hard to wrap your head around losing until you've lost it. That's a really hard thing to like actually conceive of, that like when you lose your anonymity, that's everywhere you go, you are aware that people look at you and they know your name, they know your face, they may have seen you in something, they think they know things about you. Like actually conceptualizing that without having had lost it, I think is really hard. And so I think that when people are like, what are you complaining about? You know, like, come on, like, I get it. I totally get it. And I try my best to not complain because I'm beyond fortunate and lucky and all these things. But there is something to be said about what is the price of anonymity. I don't know because I lost it a long time ago. So I don't really like have a, I realized I'd never been to a bar with my friends without being aware that people look at me and see, you know, and just it's, and it sounds like something's like not a big deal. And like, oh yeah, but you're famous or you get whatever. And I get that. I totally get that. But if you had that taken from you, it's a very tricky, weird dynamic to figure out.
Well, I'm sure you get recognized all over the world, but is Madrid a little less intense?
I mean, yes and no. I think that, you know, like a fan of the Hunger Games in Madrid is gonna react similarly to a fan of the Hunger Games era. You know, it has a huge fandom, and like that whole world is like another level of something that I can't even comprehend. I think I feel more comfortable in Spain letting my guard down more quickly than I do here when I go places. I feel like in Spain, if it happens, if I get recognized, there's something that it's usually pretty easy, and I don't have as much anxiety about it.
Right.
As opposed to when it happens here. I don't know exactly what or why, but I feel differently about it.
Yeah. Okay. What is the trait you most dislike in yourself?
I procrastinate quite a bit, and I don't do shit until it's absolutely like pertinent that this needs to happen right now. And so that to me is a trait I don't like. And it's annoying to me, and I want to change it.
Are you talking about like dishes or painting?
Everything. Everything. Like, I have 4 scripts that I need to read.
Right. Okay. To whom would you most like to apologize and why?
I've done a lot of apologizing. I usually stay up to date on my apologies. I think my younger brother. I think that like what we went through as a family, just with this whole crazy machine that has become, was my life and acting and everything. It's just really difficult. And I have feelings of guilt surrounding time just being young and my mom and dad like separating our family for me to be in California working and my dad in Kentucky with my brother. And just like, and there's been a lot of great things. I know I feel that he doesn't harbor any negative feelings about it, but I just still feel sorry for some of those things.
I think that's an incredible answer. I really do. Mm. That's a beautiful answer. Makes me want to apologize to my brother. Okay, let's see. What do you consider your greatest achievement?
I honestly would say the last like couple years, like expressing myself and communicating honestly and not like trying to worry too much about doing it in the right way or like micro manipulating people and these kinds of things that you didn't even like, wasn't even aware of. I just done like a lot of work on that lately. And I think it's a pretty big achievement for me.
Josh, I have to tell you, you're so introspective. You're so intelligent. You're so engaging. You have great stories.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Okay, wait, we're not done. I know that sounded like a wrap it up thing, but it was just a compliment that I want to give you. Okay. In one word, how would you like to be remembered?
Genuine.
I love that. That's good.
I think that it's something that, like I was saying, all those other things I've been working on, it's a hard thing to get and hold. And like, and what it even really means to be genuine to what? To whom? To yourself? To what you think your idea of yourself is? And just like all of those dynamics, like genuine, I'd like to be remembered for that.
I think that's awesome.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Awesome. We're going to call one of our listeners and try to give some unqualified advice.
Okay.
Hey.
Hey, Evan.
Hi, how are you guys?
Oh, we're great. Well, you know, we're at home. I'm here with Josh Hutchinson.
Hello, how are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, it's crazy times that we're all living in, but trying to maintain sanity.
Evan, tell us what's going on.
So I got out of an engagement in July of last year. It was rough. I moved down to be with her, help her graduate college and all of that. And we were together for almost 2 years. She ended the engagement a month before it was going to be 2 years. So that was really rough. And I never really got a chance to mourn anything. I work as a professional actor, so I went into rehearsal during that time. And then I got a new dream teaching job. And then I met my newest girlfriend, who is just incredibly perfect for me. And the problem that I'm having, though, and why I called, is that I just keep thinking about the relationship constantly. And like, there was a period where the things I used to love, I hated during that time. And now I'm starting to re-love them. And you know, I guess my question is it normal not to grieve over like a huge life change like that? Because my problem is I can't seem to get over it. I can't seem to like let it go, I guess, since I've been so busy, like constantly busy from that time. Like, how can I make sure that I can give all of my energy to this new relationship, which is going really well? I actually proposed to her a couple of days ago during the quarantine.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Well, when you think about your old relationship, do you think about it with a lot of negativity? I mean, is it usually like when you talk about mourning, what is that space feel like it should be to you? Is it anger? Is it sadness? Is it wistfulness? Is it rejection?
I think it's a combination of anger and rejection. Like, I mean, I proposed to this person. We were going to spend the rest of our lives together. And then in the span of 72 hours, it was, we're not compatible. You know, all of the aspirations and dreams you have, I can't support, you know, that kind of thing. And I think just we never really resolved it. She actually decided to enter into a new relationship about a month after the breakup. So while I was going through all of this kind of emotional turmoil and, you know, trying to keep my mind off of self-destruction, she was getting a new partner. And this new partner has a kid, has a full-time job, you know, all of that kind of thing. All the things that we wanted to have together, she just got immediately.
Are you in contact with her in any way?
No, I haven't spoken to her in about 8 or 9 months.
So it sounds to me, Evan, most of the relationships that I've been in, the guy has ended it. I mean, with plenty of, like, I mean, the cards were, I was shown his hand, like, you know, years before the breakup happened or whatever. But I, you know, I can get a little blind sometimes. But I don't really believe in the idea of closure. I think at least when people say, I just need closure or whatever. And Evan, I don't know if this is sort of where you're going, but I don't think that happens. I think that these relationships are very valuable scars, and it's a life well lived, I think, if you've been heartbroken and rejected. And I think that that's how we have to think about things. I understand that you may have, like, confusion about the rejection, too.
I guess kind of the biggest question I have is when did these thoughts come into her head, because she was the one that ended things and all of that. Like, a lot of the things she said were incredibly kind of detrimental. I work as a music teacher, and she's like, you can't support me with that. Like, you can't be what I need you to be for me with that job. So I can't support it.
So Evan, it's like your rational head is telling you that relationship was wrong and your new relationship is great.
Right.
Josh, do you have thoughts?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I mean, I totally get that and feel that pain 100%. That's extremely difficult when something like that just throws up in that way, and everything all of a sudden is like a big quantum shift. I think that for me, I agree with what Anna was saying too about closure. I think that it's really about when you love somebody and you have that, like, deep love connection. I think that love lives on forever, and you know, you might view it through a different lens from time to time, or there might be more anger, or there might be some, like, wistfulness about it. But I think that you, if I was in your position, what I think I would feel is that I would have to recognize that this relationship, it wasn't going to work. It was going to come to this point sooner or later. If these are the things that she was experiencing and feeling, and in a way, it's better that it happened. And it's like you can just move away from that and now put your energy into this new love that, it sounds like from what you're saying, works for you in a bigger way. So I think that in a way, it just sounds to me like if it's inevitable that at some point or another, and maybe it would have been like after you had gotten this job and been working and then you thought things were great and happy. And then all of a sudden, boom, it's like, you know, 2 years into a marriage and then it falls apart. And that's even, I think, probably more difficult. So in a way, as difficult and painful as it is in this moment to, like, think about it and figure out where to put it all in your mind, I wouldn't put energy into wondering when she made that decision, because that's not going to change anything. That's not going to help you. It's not going to help you to grow. It's going to just be this thing that's just kind of rotting away in your mind. And so I think that you have to look at it as a blessing in disguise. And now you have another person that you had this connection with, that you proposed to. And so I would just do everything I could to focus my energy in that and recognize that it is love lost and it's painful, but it's like part of growing and finding the person you're meant to be with is experiencing people that you're not meant to be with.
Sure. I guess just the follow-up to that is, like, is that normal? Like, you want to figure out every single possible aspect of things in order to feel like you've done a job completely. Is that, like, normal?
It's normal to question those things, but I think it's rare to get answers, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was in a relationship in my 20s with somebody who, you know, we said a lot of poisonous things to each other. And then, you know, you have to step away from that and examine, like, am I really that person? But it's like, no. We're all complicated people. So if you guys said poisonous things to each other, I would try to compartmentalize that if you can.
Mm-hmm.
But I think focusing right now on your new girlfriend and being really happy. And I was telling Josh earlier that one of my relationships in my early 20s, I was heartbroken when it ended, but I realized later as I got older that the relationship was just about me. Like, I don't really, because that's just where I was at that point in my life. Even though I, you know, whatever, was heartbroken, it was kind of like, well, what's wrong with me? Why doesn't anyone like me?
I was just thinking about the idea of, like, mourning and what that means and if that is important. And in my mind, it's mourning is such an odd and different process for everybody. So to say that you haven't mourned or given yourself the time to mourn, I don't necessarily think you're being fair to yourself in a certain way. Because everybody mourns differently. And
yes.
If right now you're, like, putting your energy into this new relationship, the idea of mourning is a process that maybe takes more time for you than someone else. Or it's not just like, I'm going to do my mourning and then I'm good. I think that's, like, it's more gray and complicated
completely.
Than that. And so thinking about kind of, you know, what we're saying before about eventually this was a thing that was going to come up in the relationship and end it. If this was that big of a difference that she did not, it would not work with what you wanted your life to be. You would have been sacrificing, she would have been sacrificing, and there would have been a lot of unhappiness that was being suppressed. And so I think that the process of mourning is thinking about it logically and rationally over the course of time. And so I think that I wouldn't personally be too worried that, like, you didn't give yourself the time to mourn, because you're doing it now. That's, like, this is part of that process,
yeah.
I think.
And Evan, here's also what I would suggest too. I would be very wary of talking too much about your ex to your new fiance.
Uh-huh.
If your ex does reach out in any way, I would be very careful and communicative with your fiance about those elements. And I also think you have to look at this as the death of a relationship. You know, when people die, there's a lot of unanswered questions.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you had a completely rational conversation with your ex, it's an unsolvable puzzle. But what matters, I think, is your future and what you learned from that relationship,
mm-hmm.
and refining what you want and figuring out what you can give to your partner. And it sounds like she makes you super happy.
Yeah.
It sounds amazing. And I wouldn't put any pressure on yourself to mourn per se. I think it's very natural that we ask questions about, like, why, what crumbled, where was it, what did I miss?
Yeah.
Like, where, like, you know, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you asked her, like I said, you know, she could be like, well, you were selfish or whatever her things are. But those are vague and they may be only applicable to her. So you can't necessarily trust her opinion to form yourself. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it could have been wrong person, wrong timing. And
it could have been too, because we were talking earlier about, like, the idea of relationships and the idea of what you want it to be. It could have been that maybe she had a different idea of what she wanted and then realized that she was playing a character. As an actor, you understand that. And, you know, like, I know I've been guilty of that before. Of, like, lying to myself and not really knowing what it is I'm doing. I'm just kind of going into something and not being completely honest. I'm, like, playing a part in a way. There's so many variables and things that, like, I think that Anna's saying is you're just not going to get answers to. So I think that the mourning process is complicated and long. And it sounds to me like you have a really solid head on your shoulders. You're a rational person. You're doing what you want to do. And you have an amazing person that is next to you now. So I think, like, don't put too much pressure on yourself to, like, figure it all out and have all the answers and make it all clean and clear. Because it just, in my experience, it's never worked that way.
Mm-hmm.
Each of my heartbreaks are very important to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And really, I wouldn't trade those journeys because they were defining for me.
Mm-hmm.
But Evan, I'm sorry that happened. I could talk to you for a long time because I want to talk to you about your new love. I think that's really exciting.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I said try not to mention her, I think in terms of comparison, but I think it's okay if you're close with her to ask her about her heartbreaks, you know, or maybe you guys can have sort of a discussion about that and how she got over some things and how, I mean, I don't know if, you know, sometimes people get funny talking about exes in terms of like jealousy and stuff. But, you know, these are important life journeys. And it might be nice. You might get some relief and you might get to know your fiance even better if you guys have a discussion.
Yeah. I think you hit it on the head. I think I've been giving myself a lot of shit for feeling like I couldn't mourn or grieve in any way. But I think, like you guys were saying, you know, putting all of my investment in things like art and musicals and my teaching gig and my new fiance, who, yes, is just the love of my life. I could not have been luckier. Really, I think that has been the grieving and mourning process. And I think I just needed people to be like, you're doing things fine. I need to know that this is the right thing.
Oh, completely.
Yeah. I tell you right now, like, I'm someone that I put extreme pressure on myself to always do things the right way and make sure I'm always, you know, doing everything the best way possible. And so I totally get that state of mind. And I think that you're absolutely right, that you're doing it, and you're doing it right, and you're doing it in your way. And just keep on that path. Things are going great, you know? Just.
I bet anything, Evan, I could be totally off the mark with this, but I bet a lot of your close friends and family probably have a degree of relief.
Oh, they very much do.
Oh, good. Well,
they very much
do. Good. That's well, great. That may be the answer that you need. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just that they saw, people around you saw that it wasn't a fit.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, you guys made each other feel not great all the time. And that's a big indication too, you know?
Sure.
Oh, Evan, but I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
Do you get to self-quarantine with your fiance?
I do, actually.
Ooh.
I'm at my parents' house, actually, and we're actually repainting my old childhood bedroom. So it's going to be our little space. So yeah, we actually get to quarantine, which is great. I actually proposed to her in quarantine, which is fantastic.
That's great.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you.
Hey, Evan, thanks so much for calling. And, you know, heartbreak and rejection. I don't know if it was heartbreak at this point. Rejection fucking stings.
Yeah.
And even like, as I don't know, we're well aware of it, all three of us as actors, but it's never easy to get, you just can't get used to it when you've invested time and emotion into things. Mm-hmm. But congratulations. Keep us posted. I want to hear wedding details. I love wedding drama.
I'll keep you posted if there's any big wedding drama.
Yeah, please keep in touch. I love talking to you, and I love you, and I love your fiance and your family. What color are you guys painting the room?
We are painting it kind of like a lighter green. We want to bring more light into the room and all that. We've been watching a lot of House Hunters, so really we're just trying to make the curb feel a little bit better and all that kind of thing.
Nice.
Well,
nice.
Congratulations again.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Evan. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Do you have a favorite joke?
Favorite joke?
Yeah, do you have a joke you could tell us?
A mushroom walks into a bar. And the bartender is like, hey, get out of here. Get out of here. We don't serve your kind. And the mushroom goes, oh, come on. I'm a fun guy. I don't know. That's his dad joke.
That's great. That's usually what we get. Really, we usually get,
yeah.
Which is the best. Hey, Josh, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I've really enjoyed it. It's been a great conversation.
Okay, well, send us a picture of a painting if you can.
Okay, yeah.
We'll put it on our thing. Josh, thanks again.
All right.
Okay,
I'll see you.
Bye, Josh.
Bye.